This is Everything is Workable, a series of podcasts and blog posts that examine how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. My name is Caitlin Hatch, and I'm a creative polymath, which is a nice short way of saying I'm a designer, artist, animator, and published author. My purpose in life is to inspire curiosity, to inspire people to let go of the limited ideas that they have about themselves and their experience. Through the posts and podcasts of Everything is Workable, I hope to share some insight into what this means and give you some ideas of how to make your world so much bigger. I'll have various different guests to share their stories, as well as sharing my own, all with the aim of seeing everything as workable, even the most uncomfortable situations. I love examining language and exploring how the words we use directly affect our experience of the world. I think I've probably said this before, actually, in a few other episodes. This is a valuable tool in seeing the workability of every situation. Because language is incredibly powerful, and it permeates every aspect of our lives. It's also dynamic, although we often look at it in a very fixed, static way. But when we examine the words we use, we can potentially change the way that we think, and even potentially change our behavior. This sounds a little bit lofty and non-specific, and I get that, so I'm going to use an example. You know me, I like my stories. My example is the word should. Should is a loaded word. I said should, yes? Here's a story. When I started meditating 7 years ago, I felt the benefits almost right away. I was calmer, more able to cope with stuff that came up, and better at responding to what was going on around me. It wasn't, like, perfect or anything, but just generally, things were working. It worked. But I didn't meditate regularly. I knew I should meditate because I had all this proof in my experience that it worked for me when I did. Nothing major, but significant enough that I was feeling a little bit more skillful and I was starting to be able to respond a little more effectively in that. I'd guilt myself when I didn't meditate because here was something really helpful and yet I wasn't willing to make time for it. I came up with a lot of excuses for why I couldn't, and they all felt quite valid, like I didn't have time before work, or I didn't have time before bed, or I didn't really have time today, but maybe tomorrow, and I would feel guilty for not doing it. Guilt and should seem to go hand in hand. When we feel we should do something or behave in a certain way and then we don't, we feel like we've done something wrong. We've let ourselves down, or we've let someone else down. It's not particularly comfortable. So, you know me, tangents, stories. I always bring it back. I promise I'll always bring it back. There's a talk Annie Pema gives in this, on the six paramitas. For those of you listening who aren't familiar with it, paramita is a Sanskrit word. And the six paramitas are generosity, enthusiasm, patience, discipline, meditation, and prajna. I just used another word that you might not have ever heard. Prajna is another Sanskrit word. It's translated in many ways as wisdom sometimes, or clear seeing, discernment, whatever. I prefer to use the word prajna, and Annie Pama does this, and a lot of other teachers do this, actually. They use the word prajna rather than picking just a single translation. Because my understanding of it is that it's not that it can be described as wisdom or clear seeing or discernment, but more like it can be described as wisdom and clear seeing and discernment. And there's lots of other examples. I can't think of them at this very moment, but prajna is one of those, it's a bit bigger than any single word in English that we might have. It is effectively our ability to see the fullness of a situation, to make a good judgment, to discern things, and then respond effectively. So definitions almost out of the way because I realize I haven't actually defined paramita, but there's a reason for that. The six paramitas could sound like a list of things we should do. Like, we should practice generosity, or we should be patient. In Pema's talk, she introduces the six paramitas, and then she says it may sound like a codified list, but she goes on to say that it isn't. And she asks us to consider, if it's not a codified list, like thou shalt be disciplined, then what is it? Which brings me back to the sticky issue of the word should. We can look at the paramitas and say that we should be generous, enthusiastic, patient, disciplined people who meditate in order to cultivate prajna. That's quite a tall order because, well, human. And when we look at any of these things in great detail, like if we spend a day just practicing generosity, we will notice very quickly how stingy we are. And then it can be really disheartening after that. So, some clarification as well. Generosity as a paramita, to understand it, again without defining paramita just yet, but saying generosity as a paramita is not just like I'm going to give change to some homeless person. Not per se. Generosity as a paramita is a practice of giving up attachment. It's staying later than we really wanted to at work to help out a colleague with a deadline. It's something that kind of stretches you uncomfortably, right? Like giving up our time when we really wanted to get home to catch up on that Netflix series. Or generosity as a paramita is you're running late and the car in front of you suddenly breaks down. And you could go around and keep going, but you decide to stop and get out and help them push their car off the road, or you stop to give them a jump start with your cables. Generosity is a paramita when you're a week away from payday and you don't really have a lot of cash left, but you know that you'll get to the end of the month just fine, even if you do give $5 or $5 for those in North America to that homeless guy that you pass every day. So it's stretching, right? When we set the intention to work with generosity, for example, just using generosity as a paramita, the idea is we aspire to be as generous as we can. And we will quickly notice how often we don't want to give up our time or our resources or our energy. And same with all the other paramitas, like same with patience. We'll notice just how impatient or entitled we feel, or enthusiasm. We will start to notice how blasé we are in our approach to so much of our life, how often we can't be bothered or we just take things for granted. And if we look at these things as things we should be doing, then we will feel guilty for not being more generous than we are, or not being more patient, or in my case, when I was first learning to meditate, for not being more disciplined and committing to even just 10 minutes of sitting a day. I had a case of I should be a better person going on. And I'd beat myself up for not meditating. This may sound familiar to some of you, and if so, you know that it's not a particularly helpful approach. So jump forward to today, however, and now I have an incredibly regular meditation practice. I sit for 20 minutes every morning and 20 minutes every evening. I sometimes meditate for 10 or 15 minutes during my lunch break, or I'll meditate while I'm on a train somewhere. I occasionally go to the Buddha Pratipa Temple in Wimbledon, which if you live in London and you've never been, I can't recommend it enough. It's absolutely gorgeous. But I'll go there on a Saturday morning and I'll meditate for an hour. I meditate to maintain my mental well-being. I meditate for the same reason I brush my teeth every day or shower every day. It's good for me, and it makes me feel refreshed and able to cope. I meditate because I want to, not because I think I should. I meditate because I enjoy it and I want to do it. So what changed? How did I go from I should to I want? Well, there were a few things. One was that I actually hit some sort of rock bottom at one point where I was faced with the choice of having another mental breakdown practically, or just sitting with and examining the anxiety that I was experiencing at the time. For me, this was a transformative experience, but I can't say it would work for everyone. I'm in no position to recommend people sit when going through an anxiety attack. But I know for me, in my case, that was a real shift in my perspective and approach to meditation. Because it wasn't something I was using to transcend how I felt. It was something I could use to become familiar with how I felt. There's a brilliant quote, and I think it's from Shantideva, I might be wrong, but the quote is, "Nothing does not grow lighter with habit and familiarity." I spent a long time considering Pema's question about the six paramitas and what they were to me, if I wasn't going to look at them as a codified list. I examined each one by spending a day practicing each one wholeheartedly. And one day it dawned on me. These were not things I should do. They're tools. Meditation is a tool. Generosity is a tool. Patience and discipline and enthusiasm and prajna are all tools. They aren't things we should use. They're things we choose to use in order to make life more workable, more enjoyable, more open and interesting. As soon as I stopped thinking of meditation as something I should do, and started seeing it as a tool that I could use to make me feel more effective in the world or to just make me feel more flexible, it stopped being difficult and then it started being really enjoyable. I never want to imply that everyone should use any of the things that I discuss or should believe any of what I'm telling you with this podcast, ever. My intention is to offer you tools, because I've got all these tools that I use all the time, and they're great, and it's brilliant. I have these conversations, and people are like, oh, you're so wise. I'm like, well, not really. I actually just listened to something, and it was great, but it does seem like it'll benefit other people. So my intention is to offer you these tools, tools that I've discovered from reading brilliant books or having conversations with incredibly wise people or listening to inspiring and thought-provoking talks. So a tool that I can offer you in this episode is how to let go of shoulding yourself. Shoulding yourself. Should implies that we should be different than we are. It doesn't allow us to start right where we are with what we have, with what's going on in our life right at that moment. Okay, so you don't have time to meditate for 20 minutes a day. That's fine. No one is saying that you should. No one is saying that you should be generous. No one is saying you should be patient or disciplined. You don't even have to tell yourself that you should be all those things. When we notice that we're not being generous, we can acknowledge it. And then we can see if we're willing to stretch ourselves this time, or if we still can't quite go that far yet. And if we can't quite go that far yet, we can say, next time, may I be able to stretch myself? And if you can't next time, you still, next time, may I be able to stretch myself? Eventually you will. We can accept that generosity is not something we don't have just because we're unwilling to give in one situation. We may know full well that there are other times when we can be really immensely generous and it comes with ease. So we work with that and we see when we can stretch ourselves and we're gentle with ourselves when we can't. Or we see if being generous in a particular situation might be of benefit. For example, I practice generosity as a way to get my creative energy going. When I've got writer's block, or there's a project that I'm finding it really difficult to focus on, I find the physical act of actually clearing stuff out from my space, like going through and just getting rid of stuff and then giving it away open-heartedly, like just, you know, like, I don't know, I gave away a bunch of canvases to this guy online. It was brilliant. And I put the effort into actually taking them to him so that he could use them. And it was amazing. It just opens up everything. It's like, the physical act of clearing a space creates mental space. And then I get the added bonus of knowing that I've given stuff that I may have been clinging to a new home where it will be appreciated and used more than I'd been appreciating or using it. When I stopped seeing meditation as something I should use and started seeing it as a tool I could use, I realized it was a tool that I could use as often or as little as I chose, depending on what was going on for me. Just like any other tool, you only use tools when you need them, when it's effective. As a tool, I was able to sit with it within my skill set to meet myself where I was at. The expectations I had around should didn't account for the fact that I was still really uncomfortable with being present in my body due to the anxiety I was experiencing at the time. So I didn't beat myself up for not being more disciplined about sitting, even though I had the prajna to see how beneficial it was. Oh, so I could recognize another tool that I had that was helping me out. And the funny thing was, as soon as I did that, as soon as I gave myself a break effectively, it was like a switch. I suddenly went from feeling like I had to force myself to sit to sitting for 15 every single morning and then 15 minutes every single evening, just like that, as regular as brushing my teeth after breakfast and just before bed. When we're able to stop shoulding ourselves, we're giving ourselves the opportunity to be more open to the tools available to us without seeing them as dictatorial. They go from commandment to an option that we can tap into, to be curious about the application of, to test and examine so we can see more clearly where we are and how we can stretch ourselves. An assignment for you, which I'm not saying that you should do, but instead suggesting you could try if you want, if you're bored, is to spend an entire day seeing how often you say you should do something. And when you catch that thought, turn it around. Take out should and put in could or might or want to and see what happens. And if you don't feel like doing that, then that's fine. That's totally fine too. No one is saying that you should. Thank you for listening to Everything is Workable, a Funwolf Creations production. If you have a question you'd like to ask, a topic that you'd like me to tackle, or if you'd like to become a contributor, you can get in touch with me through www.vast-skythinking.com by visiting the Everything is Workable blog. Thank you to the very talented Dexter Britton for sharing his music with the world. The music used in this podcast is from his Creative Commons Volume 5 album, available on www.dexterbritton.co.uk.